subject is off limits.
What is the wildest thing that you've ever done sexually?
You first.
The dog licked my balls once. Does that count?
Ew, no!
Why did you let the dog lick your balls?
Well, I didn't let him. He caught me by surprise.
Remember Tom and Linda? She kissed him. And then he kissed me.
What was it like?
Welcome to Bad Gay Movies. I am your co-host, Bill Antonio, and with me is...
Daniel Krolik.
Daniel, how are you today?
Oh, Bill.
Yeah. The usual.
That's my answer.
The very usual. We are so excited to talk about today's film because many years ago, we had a very special guest who did us the great favor of being the first person directly involved with a BGM to appear on BGM. We were so lo-fi back then that we had him.
We had Lauren Bacall on to talk about The Mirror Has Two Faces. It was an honor.
We had him on, I think we had him on someone's iPad, and then I was recording him with my iPhone, something like that. It was super, super, and like I ended up having to cut half the interview out because the sound quality was so basic. Anyway, many years later, the world has, you know, evolved, and he's still willing to talk to us, and it's a thrill to have him back. Please welcome the fabulous Mark Cirillo.
Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for having me again.
Again, Mark, you're here to talk about the film The Last Straight Man from 2014. You're here to answer a lot of questions. You've always been a super, super good sport about talking to us about the movies you've been in, and we're here to make you regret the day you were born. Okay, so Mark, before we get to the movie, you have a fundraiser going on that I want you to talk about because I want our listeners to know about it because I want people to contribute. Please tell us about it.
Okay. Thank you, for this opportunity. During the pandemic and then the three strikes basically following the pandemic, kind of ruined my career, especially since I was only making mostly bad gay movies that don't pay you very well.
Yeah.
So,
didn't stop you from whipping your dick out at every possible opportunity.
Right. They pay you less to be naked.
I might need to teach you a little something about self-preservation, but anyway, go on.
Right. So, I leased my house in LA and it's not going well. Everything went wrong with the house as soon as I left, and I have to put a new roof on, and since I was already leasing it in order to save the house, I had nothing. So I was forced to do a humiliating GoFundMe campaign for my house.
I understand why you feel that way, but I'm glad you're doing it, and I hope people contribute.
It's the reality of where we are today and where actors are, unfortunately.
And if people watch The Last Straight Man, they might find out why it's worth making sure that you get to keep your house. Because what else would we feel for you but pain?
And why I should negotiate for more money. That's what this movie should tell you.
Absolutely. To begin with, Daniel, you and I need to play a little game of The Price is Right, where we try to accurately guess how many days this movie was shot in without going over. I am going to say... 8.
Oh, that's a very respectable answer. I feel like if I say 1, I feel like if I bid $1, I think 8 is a little bit too low relatively. So I'm going to say 9.
All right. Mark, how many days was this movie shot in?
I think 7.
Ooh.
Oh my God. Neither of us get to go up to spin the wheel.
Exactly. You both have to get off the show right now. But I think we had booked for 8.
Okay.
I had asked, I ended up booking a part on Teen Wolf.
Okay.
Right before we were going into shooting. Well, I had booked it and we were supposed to shoot it before we started shooting Last Straight Man. And it rained in LA. And it was an outdoor scene. I was playing a paramedic and there was like a motorcycle accident or whatever. And they decided it wasn't safe to shoot at this bridge we were shooting at in the rain. And he wouldn't let me out. I was like, I will drive up to LA. I will drive back. I was like, one day. And I get it. I'm the lead in the movie, 1 for 2. And
But you're a lead in a movie that's paying you bupkis.
Exactly. And I would have made more. Yeah. In the one
So you had to give up Teen Wolf.
I had to give up Teen Wolf, and they were like, well, we really loved you and we're going to have you back. And I never heard from them again.
Well, the guy who was on that show is an OnlyFans star now too. So in the end, I think you're doing better. I don't know.
Is that what Tyler is doing now? Is that?
I think he has an OnlyFans. I don't know that he's famous.
Well, he was on a Ryan Murphy season. I mean, not that the two things are mutually exclusive. There's a big Venn diagram.
Yeah. What man horror is not on Ryan Murphy?
But he was on the cult season of American Horror Story, I think. Okay. The same one that Billy Eichner was on.
Right. Yeah. But not for very long, I don't think.
I think he was a sexy cop on that season. It wasn't a bad season.
Trying to remember. I never miss.
When do we get Mark on American Horror Story? There's no way that there isn't some naked gay with his dick out who's going to fall into a giant fan to get the season started.
Or else you're having butt sex and Francis Conroy shows up in your window.
Or whoever you're having sex with like has a drill for a penis. That was in Hotel, I think.
Oh, wow. So to find out that you had to give up a good gig for this movie,
It still hurts because I'd still be getting residuals from Teen Wolf.
Of course. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
And then to make it worse, he asked me to come back. They wanted to do a sequel. I guess this was his most successful film. They wanted to do a sequel web series. And one of the gay app network things was going to finance it, but apparently not for very much. And they wanted it fast. So he wrote these worse scripts than the movie, if you can believe it.
Yeah. Sorry, a sequel to this. A sequel to The Last Straight Man.
So I guess it wasn't from last.
You just keep meeting in hotel rooms until you're 90?
Well, that's what was weird. It introduced a third character. It was all sex. There was no story. And he still wanted to pay me $100 a day. And I was like,
oh boy.
Are you? And I had said, I was like, well, I'll need to see the scripts first. And he didn't get them to us until a week before shooting. And so when I finally read them, I called and I was like, I can't do this. And he had flown out this third guy from Philadelphia or something. And so it was the very first rehearsal. I went being like, well, he said I could maybe paraphrase or we could adjust the script since he wrote it so fast. And then when I got to the rehearsal, it was exactly like the first time where it was like faster, funnier, whatever, say every line as it's written. And I'm like, oh, right. Funnier. I forgot I had PTSD from this. No, I can't work funnier. With you again.
Did they make it with somebody else or did they not make it?
They tried. The network was not interested if I wasn't.
So it wasn't as easy as recasting Jan Brady for the Brady Bunch Variety Hour or something?
Exactly.
Who can recast Mark Serullo? I have a lot of
stories from because my friend Bruce wrote on that. the Brady Bunch Variety Hour.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
So who is Mark Bessinger? This is actually the second time we've done one of his movies on our show because we did Bite Marks a while back, which I thought was
his best.
Okay.
I mean,
I don't know.
It's his Deer Hunter.
I'm giving up my secrets either way. Put me in prison and make me watch it. Either one. I'm giving.
We're familiar with that summer stock staple. Same time next year.
Well, this is also ask. Did he open? I mean, this movie is obviously inspired by Same Time Next Year. Is that openly referenced when you guys are making this movie? Are you made to watch that movie?
Yes. You know what? It's interesting. I mean, he mentioned it. I had seen it. But you know what was interesting too was the Andrew Haig's film Weekend?
Yeah.
That was what he said he wanted to be more like.
He did it. He pulled it off. He's exactly
you
the
think?
Same.
Because I liked Weekend.
I love Weekend. I love Andrew Haig. I love his movie more. But
let's dive in.
Yeah.
Because I want to ask you, Mark, how many of those randy straight men in the opening scene were actually straight?
Were your exes. How many of them were your exes?
They were so horny. They were so horny for that puss.
Yeah.
So believably horny for that puss. Yeah. I don't think there was one heterosexual in that whole group.
Oh, no, we don't think
so. I don't want to out anybody because I haven't rewatched the film in decades. So
did you, none of these people were your friends?
No, some of them were, actually. Okay. Or are. I have not seen him in a little while, but yeah.
And then what happened to Mr. Scott Sell? He's in like 5 movies, according to his IMDb, and then he's done. And then Mark Bessinger has a podcast, a horror movie podcast that he had him on, and he introduced him as a construction worker. So he gave up acting? Is that...
Okay.
Yeah, that's the vibe I get. He just... Yeah. You know, moved on. He, I will say, is heterosexual.
Oh, no, we know.
Yeah. He's very openly heterosexual.
Yeah, he's super cute, and he has, like, a good-natured vibe. Not a very good actor, and that Midwestern accent really needs to go. It's, like, highly unfilmable, I have to say. But
he's a great guy.
Yeah,
I really liked working
with him. I mean, you had to sit on his face for a whole week, so I'm sure that you guys, like, you know, it would have been difficult if you didn't like him.
Yeah, no, we got along very well. I liked him a lot.
So. Does he have to smile every time he talks, or is that just his shtick?
Like I'm doing now, trying to hold everything in.
Well, it makes me laugh because he gives you a BJ for the first time, and you're like, wow, no teeth. You were really impressed. It's like, you're saying no teeth to that guy? I mean, there's a lot of teeth. I think it makes him super cute, but the man has teeth.
Yes, he does. He has a beautiful smile.
No, he's lovely. This is also the second time we've done one of his films, because he's in Out to Kill by Rob Williams.
Yes.
Our old friend, who at this point, I hope he doesn't take it personally that we've done like 7 of his movies.
I was just going to ask if you'd done every single one of his movies.
We've done a lot of them, to the point that I've held off on doing one for a while, because, you know, I don't want to. He is a gift that keeps on giving.
I mostly enjoyed how he kept referring to his wife as the wife.
The wife.
Yes. Yeah. Because I'm assuming, like, in this world of this movie, that this is a character that your character would have actually met on off screen and would have actually known her name and have some sort of interactions with.
Yet he still refers to her as the wife.
Yeah. Yes.
I think was being cute, you know? Like, I think that's...
Yeah. I just like to pretend that it was the movie that earned Glenn her 7th Oscar nomination. Yes. So every time he was like, oh, I can't stand the wife. Oh, the wife is calling again.
Yeah.
And it's always that close reference.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing that really throws me about this movie is that you guys are introduced to us as age-old best friends. So then the rest of the movie doesn't make sense as a result. Like, are you only seeing each other once a year? And if so, why, if you're best friends? Like, why do you have no knowledge of each other's lives except this one time a year? Because if I broke that fourth wall with a best friend, I don't know that I would wait a year to work that out of my system. Like, why aren't you strangers? Why aren't you two people who happened, like, you were invited to his bachelor party because you're the friend of a friend, and then things get a little... I mean, it's super believable that you guys are up late and drinking in that scene, but and this is not me casting aspersions on your acting talent, Mark, because I know you're great. Aren't you strangers? And that way, it makes sense that you have nothing, because that's what same time next year.
Or we needed, like, in that very very first sex scene after the stripper and all of those randy heterosexual guys leave the hotel room, we needed the sense that what was happening between the two of you was so unexpected and so explosive and so out of left field that we had to do this once a year for the next foreseeable future.
Yeah,
I agree. I mean, this is great because it's bringing back memories.
I'm so sorry about that.
Yeah. I know, not always good. But that was one of the first, that was like one of the very first things I asked in rehearsal was, if they're best, it just didn't really track.
Yeah.
Like
so relieving that you had these questions, Mark, because if you were like, no, it makes perfect sense, I would be like, all right, well, we're just going to have to end
what are you talking
right
about? Yeah. I don't know. I don't understand.
And I know that your job is to make it make sense. You know, like, you ask these questions, the director tells you what's what, and you're like, well, I just...
And it's the actor's onus to figure it out on its own by himself.
Yeah.
But
I'm terrible in some senses, because you're told all the time as an actor that you can never judge a script. And I'm like, but I have a mind and I went to college and I know when something's bad or not. And with the right director, maybe, but you're never going to get a great film out of a not great script.
But also, they say you can't judge a script because you don't usually know the whole script and you don't know how it's all going to come together.
There's
in this
truth.
Case, you
but if it's just the two
scene,
of you,
it's the whole thing. And you're reading it and you're like, why have we been friends for years, but now we're suddenly revealing to each other all these sex stories from the past? The one thing my best guy friends know is every time I've ever gotten anywhere near sex with anyone, because that's what we talk about.
Because it's what you talk about. Exactly. Yeah.
And also, like, why aren't we dealing with the fact that you guys are best friends? I'm sorry, Daniel, I'll let you speak in a second.
No, you won't.
I know I won't. No, you won't. Why aren't we dealing with the fact that you guys have been best friends forever and then now you're suddenly having sex? There's a fallout from that. Like, my best straight guy friend has been my best friend since we were 14. And if we had sex, it would gross me out. And not because he's not gorgeous, because he's perfect, but like, it's like, you know, having sex with a relative at this point.
Yeah. It's like, you know, your brother.
And there's a physical intimacy between the two of you in that first scene before you guys have sex that belies whatever is shocking and surprising and unexpected about the actual sex.
He cuddles with you on his couch. My friends never cuddled with me.
Yeah. And I still, and I'm holding on to a couple of straight male friends, none of whom I've ever spooned lovingly.
Never.
In a queen size bed.
Never.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? I did spoon once with one straight friend.
Yeah.
But we fell asleep, and when I woke up, he was then sleeping on the floor.
Yeah.
So, which is more realistic.
Adventures in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No wonder your roof is falling down on your head.
And then you were like, get up, Martin Scorsese.
Exactly. That's exactly how it went down.
Tell me about this experience, because you've been the lead in these bad gay movies. You have also been on, you know, sitcom sets. You have been on real movies, real TV shows, all that stuff. Like, what specifically is a takeaway experience that you have when you are the lead in these bad gay movies? Like, what skills do you feel like you're learning when you're having to do so much more heavy lifting than on a better oiled machine?
Well, what's the big difference for me is that in the things where I get to be a lead, there's no time for me to really think. Like, and especially when you have such a short shooting schedule, I do a scene, I do a costume change, I do another scene, I do a costume change. Like, it's so fast. And I kind of love that.
Sure.
Yeah,
it's like being on a soap.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, it is, which I've also done a little bit of and witnessed and then was scared by, because I could not believe how fast those actors could, like, learn new lines and then just... But they let you paraphrase on a soap, too.
Yeah, and then a few cards.
This director did not let that happen much.
Is he that precious about his perfect dialogue? Is that what it is?
A little bit. And I understand, because I believe he told me The Last Straight Man did go through, like, rewrites or something, like, he'd worked on it. At least that was my impression, that he had, like, worked on it. So that's why I was surprised when they wanted to do the sequel web series or whatever it was. And that he admitted, like, he rushed writing it for the deadline, but then still was precious about his words. And I'm like, you admitted this, though.
Because I have a lot of questions about individual lines in this movie. I think the most pertinent one is when you're post-coitus in the first scene and you pick up what I'm assuming is a copy of the romance book that your character wrote.
That
is that right?
Is correct.
Is that what it was? I couldn't tell if it was that he wrote it or that it's just in the hotel, because he has it years later. He's reading it.
Yes. So if I recall, though, I think, aren't I, like, ripping out pages of it as I...
That comes later. In the first scene, you're reading your own work, and you talk about your character having an affair with somebody who has a thriving peanut plantation. Is your character supposed to be fucking Jimmy Carter?
You know what's funny is I don't remember what the book is about.
Well, it says Tales of Love and Romance, so it's not about anything.
It's a romance novel. Yeah. I don't even think it's gay, if I recall.
It doesn't have a cover, Mark, so I don't know.
But I don't remember, but they made the book. There were two copies of it, and I kept one, and he kept one.
Did you shoot out of sequence? Because you also have to get, like, a haircut at one point, or you grow facial hair, or...
We shot out of sequence within each sort of segment. Okay. You know, like each annual segment, because so that we could change the look and stuff.
Yeah. Because did you shave on one day? Is that what you did?
Yeah, basically. Yeah. And then we would shoot, like, everything in that day or two for that segment. Yeah.
And you also, I'm assuming, provided your own pictures from your own personal life for those.
I was going to ask about the photo montages. Did you stage those, or were those?
I selected pictures that I was okay with.
So it was This Is Your Life, Mark Sorello.
and sent him a bunch, and then he chose specific ones. And I don't even remember which ones are in there. Were they good? Were there friends in them? I don't even...
There were some people in them.
Yeah. So they're now in the movie. And there's a point where they show my phone as well. And some of those are my real contacts. Like, we put in like a character name, but it was still surrounded by all my actual friends' names.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, this is because this movie is 2014.
Yeah.
Yes. Is that right? It's the 10-year anniversary.
No, well, this is why we're doing
this. It's the 10th anniversary edition of Bad Gay Movie.
And I guess my question can be justified with the fact that, well, it's once every 5 years, so this may have happened further along in the past. But in 2014, you wouldn't bring a gigantic camcorder into a hotel room to film your sex act?
Well, I have questions about this. Like, not just that you bring the...
Oh, wait. Mark's thinking.
Okay.
Mark's thinking.
No, I was just like... Oh, you know, I never thought about that. I mean,
because we would have
got like a video camera and everything. And I guess it does make sense because cell phones weren't where they were at.
Yeah.
I know,
that was like a full movie production camera that he had. It wasn't even a camcorder like we would have had back then, like a handy cam.
Only the best quality for Cooper.
Really?
But also, why is a guy who is married and having the secret liaison once a year with his best friend, why is he videotaping it? And why isn't he in the least bit hesitant about getting it all on camera?
I know, it's his idea. He brought the camera, right?
So what's up with that?
My guess is because, we must have discussed it, but... probably. I shouldn't assume that either. But I think it was that because we were only meeting up once a year, that was his like spank bank or something. Like maybe all good questions.
But again, if you're best friends, why are you only meeting once a year?
Well, and that was the other thing was, I think, because I asked that too. And
I'm
sure
you asked a lot of things.
I had a lot of questions.
Yeah. About your character. I'm sure you were professional enough not to be asking about the whole thing, but yeah.
I'm not. No, I always do that. I always approach anything I'm doing first, especially if I'm a lead, as if I'm a producer, even when I'm not.
Great.
Because it still reflects on you in so many ways.
Sure.
I mean, I've now been on your show twice for Bad Gay Movies.
And you've been in way more of them. You've shown up in, so since the first time you were on the show, the amount of times you've shown up in movies that we didn't expect you to, my favorite being that one where where you're licking that guy's muscular arm. What was that one called? The one where the guy was in love with the jogger out front of his house, and then you were like one of his
Sure.
And you're treated like a psycho fetishist because you just love licking his muscular arm. Do you do this so much?
Why don't I remember this at all?
Is? Yeah. Well, because you shot it in 5 minutes and then you were given
a bag of
McDonald's fries as payment and you left. That's why.
Was it Shut Up and Kiss Me?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Wow. You're good.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
You were so cute
in that one too.
Oh, thank you. That one scene is sort of cute.
Yeah.
But that movie is unwatchable.
Yeah,
no offense to everybody involved, but a little bit of it.
Oh, we've seen worse.
I can't watch that movie. I thought it was so bad.
You look great.
And even my scene, I'm like trying to make it as funny as possible. But isn't that the one where I use something as lube that's not lube and it burns and I have to stick my ass in a sink or something?
I don't think that's the one, is it? I don't remember. I don't know. Again, it all blends, Mark.
It all blends.
We're all dating you. We feel like we're dating you, having seen you so naked so many times. What's that like for you? I mean, I'm so happy that you are so confident because you look great. I mean, you guys are both gorgeous.
Thanks.
And but what is the experience like for you when you watch yourself in this movie? Do you suddenly find yourself, dieting harder or something like that? We're all very self-critical about that.
Well, stuff. I also replaced somebody in this movie that dropped out like 2 weeks before they were supposed to start shooting.
Yeah.
Was it Mark Ruffalo? I have a feeling it was Mark Ruffalo.
Yeah. Well,
I often replace Mark Ruffalo in things. And it's just a schedule. Yeah. It's not that he had anything against the script.
Yeah.
Weirdly, my thing is I think about that and how I didn't have enough time to prep my body. And I feel like I don't look very good in The Last Straight Man, which is sad. And
I would beg to differ.
Yeah, no, you look great.
Oh, I appreciate that.
You look great, but for a character who is an out sexually active gay man, he wears boxer shorts from the mid-century.
Yeah.
I thought that was a weird choice too.
Like, your underwear is so conservative in this movie.
I thought that was weird too, and it was a very specific choice. That was not explained to me. It was just, I think he wears boxers, wear boxers. I'm like,
oh. Okay.
But it wasn't boxer briefs. It wasn't just boxers. It was like underwear down to your knees.
Yeah, it was like straight guy boxers.
Like clown boxers.
Yeah.
Like I could have fit another person in them.
Completely.
Yeah. Even though he's the one who's more straight identified, so he'd be the one who would be wearing
You would
those.
Think, right? Yeah. And that's another,
mystery
to me as to why that was, like, it didn't really make sense. Because they do kind of, my character is like sexually active and stuff. It's all alluded to.
And even though you're best friends, but you waited till now to tell, on the night before he gets married, to tell him that you're bisexual, even though that's something you were never discussed before.
Yeah.
There's a lot of logic problems.
There's a
that
lot
would
of
be,
logic problems, a lot of loophole problems.
But they would all be solved if you simply just didn't have them be best friends. If they were just strangers, so much of this movie would make sense, because it's not like the director minds their relationship for anything. They're never talking about shared experiences of the past. They're never saying we're doing this
They do at the beginning when there's that very strange high school story about the girl blowing him in the gym with everybody in it.
But they never have shared experiences of the past in any significant way.
No. Right.
And also from year to year, there's no sense of sharing experiences within the intervening time between the hotel room visits.
Right. So then it's like, why not just have them be strangers? Because, like, we're just here to watch you guys get naked and fuck anyway.
That's a good point, because I did ask about that, because I was like, well, are we seeing each other in between? And the director told me we were.
Hmm.
Like, that we still saw each other, at least when we were in the same city, because I guess at some point we're in different places, because lives.
But then we need a reason why it's only once a year. Like, why does...
If I remember correctly, that was Coop's thing, was after it happened the first time, there wasn't it their wedding night or something? Or
yeah, it was his bachelor party, which in movies always happens 5 minutes before the wedding.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I don't remember if there's a discussion in the film, there should have been, about it, but that first segment should have ended with them having like a conversation about it, or a conversation that happened sometime in that year before the next scene that
It doesn't, Mark.
I think it was Coop's, or maybe their mutual decision that they shouldn't be doing that because he is married and identifies as straight, but they can't help themselves, so they do it every year. What I think is the bigger problem, which makes no sense at all, is like, so every year, the night before your anniversary, you do this?
Which you bring up to him. Great you bring point. Up to him in one scene, and you're like, "How do you get away to a hotel on the night before your anniversary?" And he says, "Oh, I always tell her that I have a friend in the hospital
every year, and that's believable.
No questions. The wife has no questions about
woman?
This friend in a hospital.
Is that what we're supposed to? That was what I said to him. I was
well,
like,
she gets
so
what
we're
she
just
deserves.
To believe she's dumb.
What,
it's sexist.
But also, if you guys are best friends, she knows you. So you can say, I have to do this thing with Lewis is your name.
Thank you, because I forgot my name. I was like, is it Bernie? No, that was the bellhop.
Yeah, the bellhop who was also in Bite Marks.
David Allen.
The bellhop who was fully dressed for a production of like Thoroughly Modern Millie.
Yes. Yeah. That costume was great.
He's also, what I love is he's a 1940s bellhop.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Or it was also the costume of the singing telegram in Clue when she opens the door and gets shot.
Yes. That's exactly right.
So you're pretending he's your boyfriend at the end when you cut things off with Cooper, because you say, I have a boyfriend who's dying of AIDS named Bernie, but then you guys don't know each other when Bernie brings you your room service. So you were lying?
Right. Yes. That was another loophole that I was like, and this is, I said exactly that to him. I was like, so in the beginning, I saw Bernie's name tag. That's the name I grab out of the hat and decide I have a relationship. But then I do hook up with Bernie, and then we are a couple. Like,
but you lied about him dying of AIDS.
And then he's my, and then they know him, and then we're having a picnic in the park, all four of us together.
Can we ask? I don't want to jump ahead to the end of the movie so soon. But can we ask what are in those Ziploc freezer bags?
Yes, she has a bag of mud. She pulls a bag of mud out of her cooler.
Like it looks. It looks like it could be a freezer bag of frozen meatballs or some kind of meat sauce.
Or there's just some, yeah, popular Tex-Mex sauce in LA.
Or else they're barbecuing and she's going to form the burgers before they get grilled.
I have no, I don't think I ever found out what was in those bags. Like, I was there filming and I don't think we knew.
But you were off sitting lakeside. It's at the whale tail. You guys are in Malibu, you shot that, I think, is what the end credits said.
The whale tail bench in Malibu. Yeah.
And you guys kiss right in front of the whole family.
For all to see.
Peck on the lips, which again, I have the loveliest, my two best guy friends are straight guys. They are the most wonderful men in the world. But who are not in any way self-conscious around me, and yet still we haven't reached pecking stage.
Even, well, because guys don't do that. What straight guys don't do that with other guys. Like you just don't kiss on the lips.
Yeah,
like,
you just don't do it.
Yes.
He's wearing a modesty pouch in the scene where you top him. You can see it very clearly when he gets up out of the bed to rush to the bathroom. He's wearing a which is funny because then we see him. He goes full frontal later when he's wearing the cowboy hat. He's lying on the bed.
And you're right.
He's fully dick out. Mm-hmm. So I was wondering if there was like a complication there that you were much more comfortable with the nudity than he was, or...
I mean, that... For sure. I mean, because I don't think he had ever done it before. I'm not sure he'd ever acted before.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm pretty sure he hadn't. Yeah.
That is weird. I wonder why he wore a modesty patch.
So this is not a conversation you remember.
That was not. I mean, I feel really bad because I don't remember so much now.
Well, it's a week. I mean, what do you remember from a week?
I mean, it was traumatic enough that I remember certain things.
Do you remember any lines all these years later from your Tennessee Williams monologue about the grandma and the hats?
That monologue is why I did the movie.
Okay, because I was going to ask you, what did you think when you saw the grandma monologue in the script?
That was like, oh, I have to do this movie despite everything else in the script. I actually want to do this now, and I'll tell you why. It's because I had a great Aunt Priscilla who was the world to me, and I was obsessed with her, and she was obsessed with romance novels. And, she lived in Bangor, Maine, and she had owned like a motel and a hotel that was on the vaudeville circuit. So like Bob Hill, Hope, Sammy Davis Jr., several of the Lassies, like they all stayed there.
Several of the Lassies. Yeah.
So you got stories. You got like a really rich.
And I was like,
write that screenplay, Mark. I want to see that movie.
I honestly, I have this whole thing because the only gay blood relative that I know that I had, she raised, even though she and her husband Bill couldn't have kids, she wanted to adopt. Well, first she wanted my mom because my grandmother had 8 kids. Mm-hmm. And she was like, can I have Donna? Mm-hmm. You have so many. Why can't you just give me one? And my grandmother was not into giving away her children, but one of her other sisters had a kid who was having problems in school and maybe being bullied by his brothers. And that was my gay cousin.
Oh, wow.
Who she raised him, and he helped at the hotel. And he was one of those people that I think was out, like you couldn't hide the gay. There was no hiding the gay. Yeah. And he worked at the hotel and he would hook up with guests, but she had this sixth sense about it. Mm. And she would be like, where's Dale? And she'd be like, Bill, check room 302 or something, you know?
Where's Lassie?
And he'd open the door and like Dale would be climbing out the fire escape.
Oh my God.
And there'd be like somebody's husband in the bed, like half dressed.
Amazing.
I was like, this is a great TV series.
Oh,
this is
like,
honestly, I would watch 8 episodes of that for sure.
Yeah. You're a New Englander too, right, Mark? You grew up in Connecticut?
Yes. That's just where I am right now. This is not my house or my decor.
Right. I'm somewhat relieved to hear that.
You very touchingly deliver this piece about your grandmother, about her burning her hats, about Grandma her telling Rose. You to find love, about how somehow the inscription is get out of the locker room and find love in the real world. I don't know how your grandmother knows that you're lingering in the locker room, yet she does. And for some reason, this monologue about your dead romantic grandma is what gets your friend hard and ready for fucking.
Yeah. Well, he's a special guy.
And if she meant so much to me, I never told him about her before. I mean, I'm assuming that was when I'm the most open and emotional with him, and that is what drew him in. I don't know.
Because that is supposed to, that's what this movie is going for, right? Which is the fact that you guys have a relationship that develops over the years, which is the same time next year, is that all these other things inform their lives throughout the year, and then they clash against each other in that one time they meet, and what comes out of that. And what comes out of it for you, of course, is that you stop hoping to turn this into something meaningful, and you're like, this is never going to work with this guy, and you walk away. I mean, you don't even kiss for 5 years or something like that, which I don't even know how that's possible.
Right. We still have sex, but we're still no kissing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
which, where's the fun in that?
But I do it all the time.
Yeah.
It's a grinder staple.
And then we never really find out what the development is, really, because he points out at one point that he's not even having sex with his wife. So it's like, so you wait all year to get one BJ from your guy best friend who you're supposedly seeing all the other times, that he comes over to watch a movie or you go to his place to do whatever, to hang out. And like, what, you just hold on to your self-control. So again, it would make more sense if you guys had nothing in common in your terms of your lives, in your worlds. Maybe you don't even live in the same town, but that you just get together this one time every
year. Or if the friend, and here's my elevator pitch, or if the friend
holds,
he only nuts once a year. So he holds it in the entire year waiting for this hotel room.
He's like a special orc.
That is physically impossible.
Yeah.
You would explode in the middle of the night relatively often, I would imagine.
That's why he doesn't want to kiss. He has no time for kissing because he only nuts once a year.
But why is also this character not in any way conflicted about his confused sexuality?
Because, and I think that is in the movie where we have the talk and he's like, no, I'm not gay, I'm not bi, I only like you. Doesn't he say that to me?
He does, yeah.
Yeah. And so I think that's what he was going for with the movie, was that this is a bond that comes out of like extreme closeness.
Yeah.
Like that's what the straight guy is into, is how close they are, and that's why this can happen.
Sure, but there's the things we say and then the conflicts that exist underneath.
But honestly, the word nonsensical never leaves my head in discussing.
No.
Sure.
Well, can we also talk about the year that he doesn't show up and that he calls you and that you're having some really hot phone sex, which is interrupted by his nephew?
Yeah, or his niece.
So
yeah.
Disturbing,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Well, you're doing
nephew
it on
or
a landline.
So. Was it his nephew or his son?
It's his nephew, yeah.
Yeah, because his sister was over.
Yes.
Oh, right.
And that's why he couldn't come, because the sister was over.
Yeah.
Right. Ah, yes. It's all rushing back.
And there was something wrong
And then he calls his nephew on the phone. He calls his nephew Todd Meister, like he's Rob Schneider in the photocopying sketch in 1995.
Yeah. It's like straight cliche.
Yeah. Todd Meister.
But he doesn't seem to have, like, I understand what you mean when you say that he's basically in denial, where he says, I'm not gay, I just like doing this with you. But then there's not a sense that, like, he's spending the year, because he's super cute, so he would get hit on by other men. Someone would stare at him too long in a locker room.
Where he's going and where he lives.
Yeah. But like he goes to the gym, you know, and someone stares at him a bit too long in the shower or something like that. There's never a sense that
that's why your grandmother told you to get out of the locker room and find love.
Yeah, that's true. But there's never a sense that he's like struggling with this in any way. And then we have you make this decision at the end, but the rest of the time you're just lecturing him. Like your character is just telling him.
But still doing everything.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Like I'm like, this is wrong and yada yada, and this is wrong about you, but I'm still a participant. Like, yeah.
And there's no sense, and I wish this movie had a greater sense of your character getting increasingly frustrated with how little you're getting out of this situation.
And some sort of build, at least.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
But your major turn at the end is basically that you decide, no more whiskey, I'm switching to, what is it, a vodka seltzer? What is Bernie offer you?
Something gay, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably yeah. Vodka soda.
Lucky you, you end up dating a bellboy. Yeah. The dream. Your grandmother's proud now.
Can I just point out that I had a lot of pet peeves in the movie, as I do in all my movies, when I'm rewatching them, or even when I show up on set. One of them is that whiskey bottle.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, I brought the good stuff, and it's the cheapest ass, like, identical cheap ass bottle of liquor that you could ever. And I'm like, dude, I could have brought, I mean, even Maker's Mark would have been better than this. Yeah. You know, anything like,
but what do you mean? Even Maker's Mark? Maker's Mark is great.
I love Maker's Mark. But like, we need like
meant,
a black
label. But it's sort of a mid-level
yeah.
bourbon. I mean, I drink yeah. a shit ton of bourbon. Like, I was yeah. like, I could have brought any bottle from home. And I was like, just tell me. And I this is, I guess, where I get like a producer thing. Because as an actor, to me, that's embarrassing. Because I think it's idiotic that you think, and yes, the whole movie is embarrassing, but like, I think it's idiotic for me to hold up something, refer to it as something super high end, when anybody that knows anything about that would be like,
and it's an easy fix. It's not a complicated
and it's
fix.
Super easy fix. I'd be like, I'll go buy a bottle yeah. and it'll just be my bottle, but we can use it in the movie. Like,
it's also really obvious that it's the same bottle every year. You know, it's, I mean, how right, many years does exactly. this movie even take place over? I couldn't.
Well, I'm assuming we were drinking the same brand, and so it just looked like the same bottle. But no, yeah, of course, you're right. Bottle. It was the exact yeah. same bottle.
I also personally understand the thrill of furtive and clandestine public sex. I get it. But if you're getting a BJ when the maid is cleaning up the living room, yeah. you might just close the door.
Also, I don't think hotel rooms have doorbells. There's a doorbell
or
in
come
that
back
scene.
Later or anything.
Well, that's the other thing. I've never had anyone say, no, I have to clean the room now. Like, everyone always, because she's not even properly cleaning the room. She's just tidying up the garbage. So it's like, why can't you do that later? As like, she's dying to do that.
Exactly. Right or tomorrow. It could wait a day.
Yeah. Like, plus, they never do that at night anyway. That's always during the day. It's always at noon that they come around to clean the room. It's never in the evening. So that
also good points that that we're all issues.
But again, easy fix. You just have them order room service and forget that it was coming at that moment. And he insists on, because a room service guy just comes in and then waits for you to sign the thing and leave. So like, why not just have that guy come in?
And we could have gotten another cute like 1920s vintage hotel costume.
Yeah, absolutely.
if only that was in the budget, really.
Well, that's why you got a cheap bottle of whiskey, because they blew all the money on that bellboy costume.
This is what I'm saying. I'm like, but a bottle of whiskey, it's like, but we can as a celebration, we can buy a good bottle of whiskey and just have it for the film. Like, that shouldn't have been a corner cut, you know? Like, and there were little things that were just logical things that I'm like, maybe you didn't. I don't know that he rewrites any of his work.
Well, I think on that note about the whiskey, I think they could have shelled out for a cheap actual song that could have been him and his wife's first dance instead of slow dancing to a synth track. To like a public domain synth track.
It's so the music when you go to a rub and tug is what you hear.
Completely.
Is that music? Yeah.
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 So
it's like the nephew in the back with his first synthesizer pressing bossa nova, pressing all the different sections on the automatic synthesizer.
Yeah. And I was really upset by the music. I mean, I hate to do
that.
I don't want to offend like the guy that he hired.
The computer program that created that,
But I thought it was horrible. It was inappropriate. And at times really loud, where you're like, this is loud, it's bad, and it's over the dialogue.
Yeah.
But I was upset because I got my personal friends who was a real musician to donate the next year song that you hear in the movie.
Okay.
I don't know, at some point. Like,
well, that was also a question I had.
Songs, and then there's the horrible synth track.
Yeah.
And I was like, we could have also gotten him to give us some, you know, like underscoring from his other songs or something, just so it wasn't bad music.
But that was also a story point that confused me, which is like, you want him to dance with you. He wants you to dance with him to the song that he and his wife first danced to at their wedding. So then why aren't we dealing
creepy,
with this
weird
conflict that he seems to have, which is that his wife is the real relationship in the outside world, but the secret once a year thing is the thing he has. Mm-hmm. That seems to be the real him. That right. never really comes up. Like, why? And of course, why wouldn't you be weirded out by the fact that he wants to dance with you to that song, given that I'm sure you were at that wedding and that exactly. you know his wife?
So. Yes. Yeah. I was like, can't we just have a line where I'd be like, are you right. sure this song? Because what am I stepping in for your wife? Like, what is, are you wishing you had married me and not your wife?
Yeah.
I don't know what story that's telling. I feel like my character would have reacted.
What is Mark Bessinger, how does he react? I mean, you told me that he doesn't want you to change the words, but how does he react when you have logic questions about this stuff? How would he react to that?
Dismissively, generally. Okay. Wow. Or he would explain it away like, oh, well, this, and this, or something. Like, sometimes it felt like maybe he was making it up in the moment. Sometimes right. it felt like, oh, he'd thought about it and he decided it was fine because of this. But I always thought it was weird that I was like, well, but why are you having to rationalize to make something make sense when you're the writer
right.
and you can just make it make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, or also, why aren't you listening to the fact that people have a question about it to begin with? Because that right. is
if
significant.
If it's bumping somebody that's actually analyzing and looking at the script
yeah.
wrong, don't you think somebody that's passively watching it is going to be like, what the fuck?
Hmm. Yeah. Because I've had that experience. You know, a play that I wrote, I remember working with an actor who had a lot of questions, and I realized it's because I hadn't explained it correctly in the script that I wrote. And then it helped. It ended up making it better to force myself right. to have an answer to his questions, whether or not things changed or whatever. You know,
that's
he wasn't telling me what
like
to do.
Film, TV and theater are like, they're collaborative arts.
Sure.
Like, you get yeah. more by collaborating and like. Yeah. listening to people and like whatever. I mean, to a point, you have to have a vision, but still.
Well,
yeah. And sure, there are a million actors who ask a million inappropriate questions,
well, there's
but on the other side of the coin, an actor can only, like, they're a good actor will only, a good actor will be the only one to ask character-based questions that nobody else will ask because the actor will have access to the script in a different way than anybody else.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, I studied film and theater. I went to college for it. I've studied it my whole life. Like,
you know what you're doing.
It's not like I don't want to be one of the, I don't ask stupid questions because I'm like, mm-hmm. they come out of a place.
I do, before I have to leave, I do have to leave in a moment. But Mark, I do want to commend you for your conviction when you're topping your friend and you say you're just as tight as a keyhole. It's like fucking a keyhole. I do want to commend you on your absolute commitment to this line.
Yeah, yeah.
A keyhole. Really believable? Yeah. You just bought it. You were just like, wow. Mm-hmm.
Is that anyone's fantasy? Getting it into a keyhole? Yeah.
Well, maybe for those Alice in Wonderland fetishists out there, but...
Hmm. Yeah.
I mean, sometimes you just have to say the line.
No, because I think that truly good acting, I think, is all comes down to relaxed muscles, quite frankly. I think a lot of it just has to do with how the director makes you feel on their set. And they should make you feel like you can ask questions. And whether or not they take them, make changes based on them, I think is irrelevant. I think it's just making you feel like you're safe, especially... in a movie where you're having to be very intimate and reveal yourself and, you know, sexually and all that stuff, shouldn't they do everything possible to make you comfortable so that then it only improves your performance and then makes them look better? Isn't that
yes,
how it should work?
That's exactly right. In fact, most, yeah.
That's my experience.
Exactly what you said about acting is such a sort of universal truth where it's like, oh, you kind of do have to come from a place of being completely relaxed, comfortable yeah. and open.
Like
to
focused,
just have
but,
real emotion.
Yeah. But yeah. bad acting is usually tension in the muscles, I find.
More yeah. It's usually else. You're holding on to something you don't need to be holding on to that yeah. you can like, yeah, release. So yes, that is totally true.
Did they give you something to put in your mouth when you're filming blowjob scenes?
No, I don't. What?
You're just
it's not like
your
you're
head.
Showing the blowjob.
No,
know
but you're
I'm...
seeing like a head. You're seeing a head pop in and out of the frame, right? And then he blows
yeah,
you on
yeah.
his knees, like with his back to camera. So he's bobbing in and out. And I'm always curious, do they help? Is it achieved better with having, because I would want something in my mouth. I don't want to fake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm trying. I don't. Yeah, you know, I don't. I think we did something like this.
Amazing.
Yeah. Well, to ruin the illusion for everyone. Because I don't think. Yeah, I remember in the seminary and I had to faux masturbate and I had to have something in my hand
right
hold,
yeah so I was wondering if there's a standard for that sort of
yeah.
thing. Did you ever see this movie with a public screen? Like, did you ever do a public screening of this movie? Did you ever see it with an audience?
Oh yes, I one screening was on a gay cruise. It was on the Atlantis cruise.
Amazing. Brilliant. So you got laid, at least.
Which is really like the audience, because it was a beautiful sunny day. So only the people who were avoiding sun came to see it, which was the older echelon of Bob.
I'm going to bow out, Mark. Okay. Yeah, it's always a pleasure.
It was so great. I'm so sorry that we started late and you have to run. But
all good. I'm just happy to see you.
It was so good to see you. Thank you again.
Yeah. So what was the reaction like? And how was that for you?
I'm glad you asked that, because I was actually going to, I did want to mention that this is by far the most popular of all my movies, that more people write to me about and say they're a big fan. And if they don't say what they know me from and I ask, this is always the movie they list first. And really? I know it's the nudity. No, there's no, like, I think The Pillow Book is the only movie that has as much nudity as this and still considered a legit movie.
Yeah.
And of course, Ewan McGregor is one of my idols, because I think he's only the only other person that's done as much nudity as I have.
He's so
not done porn.
Yeah. Well. You do have a roof to fix, Mark. You know, it's 1 monthly fee away. Yeah.
And that has also been suggested to me, so thank you. Wow.
It's just not as fun as it looks, I think, is the real problem with that.
It just sounds like, it just seems like work. And anytime you have to turn something into work that is normally pleasure, sometimes takes something out of it.
Well, I mean, you filmed enough sex scenes to know that they're not as fun as doing the real thing. So,
they're ridiculous. They're not great. And awkward. They're just awkward, usually.
Yeah. Well, especially if you've got a straight guy.
I find it so, I don't know what to say to people, because I don't want to like bash their opinions of films and stuff, but it is interesting when people say that they related to the film, that the story, like that they had a similar experience or a similar relationship with somebody, but then inevitably they're always like, we never actually did anything, but I was in love with him. And I'm like, but that's the true story, you know, like this is a fantasy.
For sure. And some people like to work that hard watching a movie, you know, they like to put a lot of it onto it.
Or be in it. I mean, I get that. I really want to like, I love a movie where it's so good that I can like, you know, sit close to the screen and just feel like I'm in it and I'm in that world and it is a full escape. I don't think that's this movie.
I don't know. I mean, you guys look good naked. Maybe some people want to put their faces right up against that screen. I don't know.
Yeah.
I do not know.
Yeah.
You, according to Wikipedia, you are a descendant of Civil War hero Ulysses S. Grant.
Yes.
Your multiple great grandfather. Is that what it
is? Yeah. It's something. I mean, I hope I didn't mess it up. We have like the whole written out family tree somewhere. But on my mother's side, my mother's a Merritt, but we also have Roys. And you can trace back the Merritts and the Roys all the way back to
that's incredible. Ulysses S. Grant. So Ulysses S. Grant looks into the future in a crystal ball to find out where his family ends up. And he discovers that there's an invention of movies. He watches The Birth of a Nation and he watches The Last Straight Man. What do you think how do you think he feels about the results of his efforts?
The poor guy. Oh, yeah. His head just must have exploded, especially having fought against everything Birth of a Nation was for.
First of all.
And then then his descendant after everything he did fight for, I feel like there'd be a lot like spinning him in his grave rapidly.
Sure.
In the world, it wouldn't even just be
the history of the entire
country.
The
fact that the Civil War is basically still happening in this election is so absurd.
Yeah, he'd probably think, why did I even bother? We just should have let him go.
Yeah, gay stuff, I hope he's okay with. I mean, he was in the military with all those men for so long at a time. You have to assume he wasn't unaware.
Yeah.
But who knows?
Fascinating.
But the fact that he seemed like a pretty decent, good person that was on the right side of everything and really good friends with Lincoln, I really hope, that, you know. And knowing Lincoln was pretty openly bisexual, like...
Is that apocryphal or do we know that for a fact? I feel like...
Now I think it's been documented. There's been more than one book that actually, like... documents like a person who he was known, a guy who he's he slept in the same bed with more than his own wife.
Yeah.
That
But that was common. That was common for non-sexual people to do
back yeah. then.
It was actually common to like rent a hotel room and have somebody
together, like two would, guys. Yeah, yeah, and so, that's where it becomes like debatable because you wonder, yeah. but they had such a long relationship. You don't know. I mean,
yeah, you're in danger of like interpreting yeah. culture through a
model. He had every STD basically. In the book, but everybody back then did.
Right. Yeah. I think that's really cool though that you have that in your family tree.
I love it too. I have to do more because I know that there's, you know, more out there. But none of us, we did all that when we had to do it the old school way of tracing yeah. back. And now we have like 23andMe and all of those that yeah. we have to do the real blood thing. I should do that. I will do that.
So to go back to the beginning of the movie to end this, you have a stripper, you have a female stripper at the beginning of this movie. Who was this person? Obviously a good sport about showing up to show her tatas on screen.
She's a screen queen. That
actor. Oh, that's right. Yeah, I did see
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and I think she's also in another one of Mark Messenger's
oh, okay.
movies, right. I think. Yeah.
Picking up a quarter with her pussy is what she is talented for. I've seen strippers.
I don't think the actress actually does that, but the character in the movie, yes.
Well, listen, having a straight best friend and having hosted his bachelor party, I've seen what those ladies can do with those things. With paper money. Shopping. I did yeah. not know you could pick up a coin.
A coin would be really hard. Like, yeah. that's a lot of muscles and precision.
Yeah. Like, I sat there while my buddy and his friends lay on the floor with $5 bills on their noses.
She would pick it
up. Yeah, yeah, like a claw, like the, the, you know, the game with the claw, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I didn't volunteer myself.
No, not your thing.
I was good. I was a lot like you in that scene, actually, where you're like, no, when she comes to give you a lap dance. But
yeah, I don't know if I would even do that with a male stripper doing that with his ass or something, especially after hitting everybody else in the party.
Yeah, I also don't, for all that I love the seedy side of life, I don't know that I like the idea of strippers in private, like, residences or hotel rooms. Like, go to an establishment for this sort of thing. It's always weird to me.
Put it out in public, because when it's not in public, it gets feels creepy.
Yeah, when people and hire dangerous. A performer to come to their private house party, I don't know, like, I would hope that these girls come with somebody who's watching over them or something. I don't know. It all feels a very sex trafficky to me, and I try not to be super conservative about that sort of thing, but
yeah. At my 30th birthday, somebody hired a Barbie who would normally work a kid's party to right. come to my party as amazing. A Barbie. And it was yeah. a nightmare. It was like, it was bad and sad and yeah. Weird. And, but it's funny because there's the moment in the Barbie movie where she goes up to the girl she thinks was playing with her as a Barbie. And they're like, this is like your job. You go around pretending you're Barbie. And that's exactly what it was like.
Wow.
It was weird.
Mark, I can't even tell you what a pleasure it was to have you on the show today. Thank you again, as always, for being so such a good sport talking about these things, because I really think you have nothing to be ashamed of with these movies. I really I really hope you're proud of your achievements, because you're an actor, and this is what actors do. They show up, they learn their lines, and they do their goddamn job. This is what we all do.
Yes. And honestly, what's funny that's not embarrassing? You know, like, humor is usually, you've got to sure. be making fun of yourself and like yeah. whatever. And I thank you guys, because you are just a delight.
Oh, well,
I thanks. Love your podcast. I love that you do what you do, because as a person that before I was in gay movies, watched a ton of gay movies, still do.
Yeah.
Like, you deal with all the things that are my pet peeves. Like, I get that we have no budget right. and that we have to shoot fast and that there's all these things working against us. It doesn't always mean that the movie has to be bad.
No, or at least it could still make sense, you know,
exactly.
even like on these limited terms.
All but, starts with the script.
But from what I've heard about some of these directors, including some of them who've written us whiny emails, you know, when I hear from them, I'm like, oh, well, this is why your stuff is bad, is because you won't even brook any manner of criticism or questioning, you know,
or objectivity of your own thing. Yeah. Like, it's like you should be able to step back and like listen. But yeah. I grew up, you know, making art, and so you know, every week as a child and through college, I would have a critique of my art. And when you do an acting class, you have to deal with critiques, and yeah. so you have to have a sense of humor about it, but also listen and acknowledge and
And be willing to learn.
People don't like to look at themselves. People can't look at themselves, you know.
But then don't be surprised when everyone hates your stuff if you're not willing to.
Looking at yourself and having accountability is very difficult.
Yeah. Like, there are a lot of us who just love acting. We love working and we just want to work. Like, we don't care about being famous and we don't care about winning awards. We just want to work. And it's like, when even that's not available to you, that's lame. You know, that's so terrible.
And I mean, they're talking about the crunch after the pandemic and after the strikes, because it's like, okay, well, we'll give you a little bit of what you want, but then we're literally going to shut down half of the productions because we don't want to pay that much. Yeah. So we're just going to do less. So now there's less work. It's going to people that were way more established.
Yeah.
And, but on the accountability and being able to look at myself thing, I've fucked up a lot. You know, I've put my foot in my mouth in front of very big writer producers, including Ryan. I've never done something right in front of Ryan Murphy. I've only ever fucked up in front of Ryan Murphy. Yeah. His casting directors I've done well in front of, but also not in some of them.
Well, casting directors are the only people you should worry about.
But most of them, but then I'll get to the level. And then when I know he has final say on even if you have one word on his shows. And when it's down to me and maybe one other person or two,
right.
I'm like, I know you know me and that we used to have mutual friends. Throw an actor a bone. Like, what are you doing? I got that far. I've proven myself. Like, at that point, you know, but maybe there was somebody else he also knew up for the same part. You know, you don't know. And I may have not watched it. I don't know. I watch everything he does, but maybe it got cut. Who knows? There's so many things
I know
that can go wrong.
And you're in I'm in a tiny, tiny country and there's still not enough work for what we have in Toronto, let alone when you're in the big ocean of LA, which, you know.
Right.
I don't know. I would never have even gotten as far as you did. So I think
sweet, but you can't say that. You don't know.
You don't. Like, well, you don't know. I never had a desire to go out there, so I don't really. Right. I have no regrets about that sort of thing.
Doing it. Yeah.
I mean, I wanted to be a movie star when I was a little kid because I wanted to be somebody else because I was always criticized for who I was.
Right. And we have to admit that that's part of where that came from. It was only later. But I was a terrible actor during that whole period, too. Right. I was really bad at it.
When I was young,
It was only once I dealt with myself and went to college and had really great teachers.
Yeah. But I also found at one point that, like, the film, you know, when I first started trying out for film and TV in my 20s, the industry wasn't interested in me, and I found that I didn't mind. I didn't take it very personally. Yeah. But I liked acting, so I just kept doing whatever I could do, and then I got into doing theater, and I found it's this weird thing where I much prefer doing theater. I just much prefer watching films. But theater doesn't pay here either, so, you know, I've kept a day job the whole time, and I don't know, things worked out the way they worked out, and I have no regrets about it.
I'm thinking, well, God, if I am going to be here longer, I might start doing theater here too, just to work.
You'll be there as long as you need to be there, and then you'll go back to LA. Mark, thank you very, very much for doing this again, and please let's do it again.
An honor.
you have so many movies I want to talk to you about that we have to have you on again.
We should, but just once a season, and we would still not get through them all.
It would be a dream. But first, what I really want is for you to keep your house. So please tell our listeners how they can contribute, what the website is, or whatever.
Oh, okay, yeah, and I have the links up on all, like, in my profile on Instagram and Facebook, and there's posts on all those, even Twitter. Which, if some of it still exists. But it's GoFundMe, so you can also just find it under GoFundMe in my name.
Okay.
But yeah, and my Twitter's at TheMarkCirillo. I mean, my Instagram is that. I don't even know what my Twitter is. Maybe it's...
Well, I'll have you linked. Yeah. I'll link it when the episode comes out. But anyway, Mark, I could honestly talk to you for hours.
I know. This has been so much fun.
Yeah. No, you're so generous, and I love the stories, and I love hearing from you. And again, I think you're so great. I think your acting is so great. I think your career is great. I think some of these movies are just absolute eyesores that are terrible for humanity. And I think you should be so proud that you got to be a part of them, because you got to be there. You got to see it. You got to experience. I think it's marvelous.
Oh, thank you so much for saying that. Please keep that in.
I will. I honestly think you're great. And I think it's great that you've been on the show, because again, I said this to you last time, there's nothing I love more than a good sport. And so the fact that you're, you know, willing to come in here and risk being ridiculed by us is wonderful, and something we take super, super much to heart.
No, I mean, I love it. I mean, yeah, self-awareness is a good thing.
Yeah. Well, thank you again, and we'll have you on again soon.
Oh, I would love that. And okay. You guys are the best. I adore you. So thank you again.
All right.